Sunday Tama Talk.
Welcome, listeners. I'm Prat Bart, Prat Kru Baidika Dr. Barton Yanatiro from the United States. Today I will be interviewing Dr. Prat Rajayan Wisit, Abbot of Wat Lung Poso Tamakayaram in Damnon Saduak District of Ratberi Province. We will discuss Asana Bucha, the major Buddhist holiday today, what it stands for, and how to celebrate it. First, I would like to introduce Dr. Prat Rajayan Wisit for those who are not yet familiar with him. Dr. Prat Rajayan Wisit is one of Thailand's most eminent meditation masters and Buddhist scholars. His mission is to revitalize Buddhism, placing equal emphasis on academic study and meditation practice. Dr. Prat Rajayan Wisit is the abbot of Wat Lung Poso Tamakayaram in Damnon Saduak District of Ratberi Province. He has studied, practiced, and taught Buddhist meditation since 1970. In 1986, he ordained as a monk, and in 2004, he received his current ecclesiastical rank of Prat Rajayan Wisit. This year, he was awarded an honorary doctorate in Buddhist administration from Mahachulalongkorn Rajawitayalaya University. He has led Wat Lung Poso to become a center of excellence in both meditation practice and academic studies. The Sangha body has established Wat Lung Poso as both a provincial school of Pali education and a provincial Buddhist meditation institute. The Wat is also an academic services unit of Mahachulalongkorn Rajawitayalaya University, and the Meditation Institute is an associated institution of the World Buddhist University. In brief, Dr. Prat Rajayan Wisit has an extremely impressive record, and we are particularly privileged to have him with us today. Dr. Prat Rajayan Wisit, Venerable Sir, we bid you welcome. Well, sir, we are going to discuss Asana Bucha, the major Buddhist holiday today. Can you begin by telling us what Asana Bucha commemorates?
Good morning, everyone. Asana Bucha commemorates the day on which Lord Buddha gave his first teaching, his first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, 2,595 years ago. Like most Buddhist holidays, it follows the lunar calendar, so the date varies from year to year. It occurs on the full moon day of the 8th lunar month of Asanha, which is always the day before entering the Buddhist Lent, or the formal rainy season. This year, it is today, Sunday, July 29th. After Lord Buddha achieved enlightenment, he spent 7 weeks dwelling in the area surrounding the Bo tree, contemplating what to do with his newfound knowledge. Initially, he was inclined not to teach, thinking that men were generally driven by lust and hate, and so they were incapable for understanding such sublime knowledge. He realized that his insights were very deep and hard to comprehend, so he questioned whether anyone else could understand them if he were to teach. In his second week, while sitting under the goat herder's banyan tree, Brahma Sahambadi visited Lord Buddha and told him what a calamity it would be for all mankind if Lord Buddha did not teach, and told him that some people were indeed ready to hear and understand the Dhamma. Ultimately, Lord Buddha concluded with his analogy of lotuses in a pond. Some people were like lotuses, right at the surface, ready to bloom. They could understand if given only a brief word. A second group were like lotuses near the surface. They could understand if given a more complete explanation and would bloom soon. A third group were like the lotuses still deep in the water. They would not bloom soon, but could still benefit from his teaching. Finally, the last group were like the lotuses stuck in the mud at the bottom of the pond. They were not destined to bloom. They were only food for the fish and turtles. He should not waste his time trying to teach this group. Having decided to teach, he reflected on whom he should teach first. He first thought of his own former teachers, Alarakalama and Uttaka Ramaputta, but perceived with his psychic powers that they had both passed on to the formless Brahman heaven. So he decided to teach the five hermits, or Panchavakya, who had been his own followers until he had given up extreme self-torture for the middle path. He did this after a celestial being taught him in meditation that a lyre string, when overly stretched, is brittle and liable to break, and that a lyre string, when too loose, doesn't make any sound. Only the middle path, tuned just right, succeeds in producing beautiful music. So he took some food, and seeing this, the five hermits thought he was giving up, and then left him. With his psychic power, he saw that they were now dwelling in Isipatana Deer Park, near Benares. As he approached them on foot, the hermits agreed not to welcome him with respect, but he told them that he had achieved enlightenment and asked them to reflect that he had never said this before. This eased their skepticism sufficiently for them to listen to his teaching.
What did he teach?
He began by teaching the middle path and the danger of the two extremes of overindulgence on the one hand and self-torture on the other hand. But his major teaching was about the Four Noble Truths that were his ultimate discovery in enlightenment. First, the truth of suffering, the noble truth that all world beings are suffering. More simply, birth inevitably leads to old age, sickness, and death. But Lord Buddha saw further that death regularly leads to rebirth in an endless chain of continuous suffering. Even the Brahmins who reach the highest heavens ultimately die and return to suffering in the lower planes. Second, the truth of the cause of suffering, that suffering is immediately due to craving or over-desire, and ultimately based on ignorance. Living in this world is like being in a dark room where we cannot see anything, or it is like a chicken inside the egg who never see the outside. Ignorance means no knowledge of the past. You don't know where you have been before becoming a human being, right? Me too. Because of this ignorance, no knowledge of the past, no knowledge of the future, and no knowledge of the past and the future. No knowledge of dependent origination. No knowledge of the Four Noble Truths. This caused world beings misthought, misview, misconception, and then misconduct, such as violating the five precepts or engaging in abhayamukha, going bar hopping at night, another kind of bad conduct. This is the way to disaster, giving free rein to sexual feelings and intoxication or addiction to gambling. All of this will result in suffering either in this life or in the future, sooner or later, more or less. But if we meditate to see the past and the future, as he did, we can see as Lord Buddha saw before. Third, the truth of existence of a state with no suffering. Because the cause of suffering has been eliminated, the supreme peace and happiness of Nirvana. If you reach that state of mind, you will experience it. But most world beings will never meditate, never touch that level, never experience it. And fourth, the Noble Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of suffering. Specific guidelines on how to live. They are right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. These are often summarized as the three training, sila or morality, samadhi or concentration, and vipassana, leading to right wisdom or panya.
What was the result of this teaching?
The immediate result was that Gotanya, the leader of the five hermits, gained the Dhamma eye, that is, he transcended to the first level of noble disciple, stream enterer, or Sotaban, the last leg of the journey to enlightenment. From then on, he was known as Anya Gotanya, or the Gotanya who sees. He had been the youngest of the 108 Brahmins who foretold the future of Prince Siddhartha as a baby. He was the only one to predict firmly that Prince Siddhartha would definitely become a Buddha. When Prince Siddhartha left the palace to become a recluse, Gotanya organized the sons of four other Brahmins to follow him, because the other Brahmins had all passed away. Now, Gotanya was the first to gain transcendence and asked Lord Buddha to ordain him. This completed the triple gem, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. This is what makes Asanya Bhuja one of the four major holy days of Buddhism.
You say that the most important aspect of Asanya Bhuja Day is that it completed the triple gem. This is an important term that we hear often, but it's a bit confusing. Can you explain it for us?
The three gems of Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, lie at the heart of Buddhism. As Lord Buddha was passing on to Nirvana, he did not appoint any human successor, but rather said that from now on, Dhamma and the Sangha would be the teachers. This is the importance of the triple gem. We learn Dhamma, and we learn it from the monks who collectively constitute the Sangha, which is the third component of the triple gem, initiated on Asanya Bhuja Day.
And what happened following that first day?
Although the four younger hermits did not immediately transcend, they were impressed by the transcendence of their leader. Lord Buddha arranged to teach each one of the four hermits personally over the next 4 days. Each day, three would go on the alms round and get food for all six of them, including Lord Buddha. While he taught one of them individually, the result was that after the 5 days, all five had transcended to the stream enterer of Sotaban, level of noble disciple.
And how did they all eventually achieve enlightenment?
On the sixth day, Lord Buddha gave his second sermon, the Anattalakkhana Sutta, or the Sermon on Non-Self. Upon listening to this sermon, all five achieved the complete enlightenment of the highest Arahant, noble disciple. In this sermon, Lord Buddha compared and contrasted true self with non-self. This is a very important point. Since many Buddhist scholars mistakenly say that Lord Buddha never spoke of true self in teaching about rupa or form, which means body, Lord Buddha said, "This is not your true body, because you cannot say to this body, 'Body, don't grow old, don't get sick, don't die.' If this were your true body, it would not grow old, would not get sick, and would not die." This is a description of what happens in Nirvana. He repeated the same teaching for each of the other four aggregates, or khandha, which are feelings, or vedana, perception, sanya, thought, sankhara, and consciousness, vijnana.
It sounds like there are various steps along the way to enlightenment. Can you explain further?
Yes, there are four steps along the final path to enlightenment. These are referred to as the four noble disciples, or Aryapukkala, who are guarantee of eventual enlightenment. Progress is measured by eradication, the 10 final spiritual fetters or sanyod, the most deeply embedded defilements, which are the last to go. The 10 spiritual fetters are divided into 5 gross lower fetters, which are wrong idea regarding self, doubt, clinging to false rituals, lustful desire, and irritation, and 5 higher fetters related to meditation, which are delight in subtle forms, delight in formless meditation, pride, distracting thoughts, and ignorance. The first noble disciple is the stream enterer, or Sotaban, who has eradicated the first 3 of the 10 fetters. He is able to realize the four noble truths somewhat, but not completely. The second noble disciple is the once returner, or Sakatakami, who only needs to come back to the human realm one more time. He has also minimized fetters 4 and 5, which are desire and irritation. Opposite sides of the same coin. The third noble disciple is the non-returner, or Anakami, who has eradicated all 5 of the lower fetters. He never needs to return to the human realm, but will live all remaining lifetimes in the pure land of heaven, that is Sutthavat heaven, until the eventually achieve full enlightenment. Finally, the four noble disciples is the Arahant, or saint, who has eradicated all 10 of the fetters and achieve full enlightenment. These are the detailed steps, but some may achieve full enlightenment right away through perfect meditation. The unique aspect of Asana Buddha is that it comes at the beginning of the rainy season or Buddhist Lent. Initially, the monks did not have any clothes to wear while bathing. One day, Lord Buddha's greatest laywoman follower, Maha Upasika Visakha, was coming to bring offerings and come upon the monks, all showering naked in the rain. She was distressed and asked Lord Buddha for permission to donate rain cloth for the monks. He agreed and gave the monks permission to accept such gifts. So, it has become a custom for Thai Buddhists to offer rain cloth at the beginning of the rains. These gifts are often combined with other personal necessities such as toothbrushes, soap, and towels, which will serve the monks throughout the rainy season. The laity should, of course, also bring food offerings as they would normally and listen to Dhamma teachings and practice meditation. The teachings on Asanha Pujha Day are often concerned with the Four Noble Truths, and the monks often chant the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Many wats also organize a vientiane, walking mindfully three times around key Buddha statues to show respect. Buddhists may take 8 precepts for duration of the holy day and night, being careful to refrain from bad conduct, to do good, and to work on purifying their minds. In fact, these teachings of Lord Buddha, observing at least 5 precepts, should always be practiced in order to receive good results throughout life.
What are the 5 precepts that one should observe, and how important are they?
The 5 precepts are, number 1, avoiding killing living beings. Number 2, avoid thefts. Number 3, avoid adultery or sexual relations outside marriage. Number 4, avoid false or nasty speech. And number 5, avoid intoxicants. Lord Buddha taught these 5 precepts based on his enlightened knowledge of the natural laws of life and rebirth. Violation of any of these precepts yields harmful results, both in this lifetime and in the future rebirth. For example, violation of the first precept on killing results in physical disasters such as sickness, a short lifespan, or becoming lame through such events as accidents, or natural phenomena like fire, disease, or lightning. Violation of the second precept on theft results in property disaster, such as having property destroyed through natural events like fire, flood, robbery, or being seized by the government. Violation of the third precept on adultery can result in broken home or lost reputation and position, or even disease such as HIV and life-threatening situation due to jealousy. Violation of the fourth precept on false or nasty speech can lead to discredit, with no one believe your word, even when you were blatantly, falsely accused. Violation of the fifth precept on intoxicants yield a disaster to both physical and mental health, such as weakness of body, alcoholism, high blood pressure, and working disability. No one will rely on you. In addition, there are unhappy states or hells for rebirth related to each of these precepts violation. For example, those committing adultery may be reborn as dogs or as hungry ghosts covered with body scores.
Finally, you have mentioned the importance of meditation. Can you give us a brief introduction as to how to meditate?
All right. You may sit in a regular meditation posture, cross-legged, as seen in some Buddha images, with the right leg resting upon the left, the right hand raised on the left, palms turned upward, with the right index finger just touching the left thumb. The body is upright and the mind is fully alert. Take a deep breath and relax the body until you feel comfortable. Close your eyelids lightly. Do not press them. In basic Samatha Vipassana practice, we use two aids. The repetitive word, Parikam Bhavana, and the object of visualization, Parikam Nimitta. The repetitive word is Samma Arahang, and the object of visualization is a bright, clear, luminous sphere. Using these aids, we draw the mind inward to the center of the body. Such concentration allows the mind components of vision, memory, thought, and awareness to come together into oneness. Begin by visualizing a bright sphere at the center of the body, just two fingers' width above the navel or belly button. This is the mind's permanent resting place. Whenever a person or any other creatures is born, dies, sleep, or wakens, the Dhamma sphere which governs the body arises from this position. The Dhamma sphere is composed of the vision sphere, the memory sphere, the thought sphere, and the awareness sphere. Keep the bright sphere resting on at the center of the body. Mentally recite the word Samma Arahang continuously to keep the sphere still and make it become brighter and clearer. Focus your mind at the bright center of the sphere and at the bright center of each successive sphere that emerges. Pay no attention to any external sensation. Do not force the mind too strongly. Do not use the physical eyes to focus on the vision. Always focus on the center of each new sphere which emerges. Rest the mind there. Eventually, a bright, clear sphere will arise. This is the Dhamma sphere. Do not be overjoyed. Keep your mind calm and equanimity. Hold the mind still and stop repeating Samma Arahang. Just concentrate at the center of the Dhamma sphere. This is your own nucleus, which gave rise to this body and this mind. This is the beginning of the path. Deeper levels of meditation are achieved in the same way, always stopping still at the center of the center. You have already learned the essence of the techniques. Now, let us slowly come out of meditation and share our merits with all beings everywhere throughout the universe. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be free from enmity.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rajayan Wisit. You have taught us a lot and opened new doors.
You are welcome. May Lord Buddha be with all of you.
Sunday Dhamma Talk.